The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library with additional support from Clark County Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, and Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. I'd like to welcome back to the program today Teresa Kaminsky. She joins us on the telephone in Wisconsin, and she's recently published a book called Queen of the West, The Life and Times of Dale Evans. Welcome back, Teresa.
Thanks so much, Vic. I really appreciate it.
Teresa, I am of a vintage where the second I heard about this book and who was about, I said, I remember her, but I'm sure we have a lot of listeners out there who have no clue who Dale Evans was. Who was she?
She was a very popular singer and actor. Her career stretched from the late 1920s until until her death in the early 2000s. She was probably best known as the wife of the singing cowboy Roy Rogers. But as I discuss in my book, she had a career before she met Roy, and even after she teamed up with him, she always had some of her own projects as well. She was, I think, what we would probably recognize pretty easily today as a celebrity in every sense of the word, and tremendously popular, especially in the 40s and 50s.
And believe it or not, we probably have some listeners out there who have never heard of Roy Rogers.
Right. And Roy kind of came up in the same way that Dale did, maybe a little bit earlier, but he was very popular on the radio first as kind of a country western singer, and he moved into films, and he was for a long time with Republic Studios, which made a lot of the black and white westerns, and to be a singing cowboy, I guess, but if you haven't heard of Roy Rogers, maybe you also haven't heard of Gene Autry, but that would have been one of the other big celebrities from that time period. And these kinds of actor singers were very popular, especially during sort of early movie days. They had a very high crossover appeal, so people who bought records and listened to the radio would then also go to the movies to see their favorite singers on the big screen. And that's how Roy Rogers got really famous, and that's how Dale Evans would also gain a lot of her fame, making that transition from radio, in-person singing, and then to Hollywood.
Teresa Kaminsky joins us. Her book is Queen of the West, The Life and Times of Dale Evans. And I remember watching the Roy Rogers Show on TV when I was a little kid, and I didn't realize until I read your book just how this all came about. And Dale Evans went through an awful lot before she got to know Roy Rogers. I'm guessing that you had to really dig deeply to do the research on this, and it must have taken you a really long time, because you go way back and you tell us things about her that I frankly was astonished to find out about her early life and her failed marriages. And I mean, this is really quite a story. She was a very persistent person.
She was. You're right about the research. It's a project I'd been working on for about 10 years. So I had other things that kind of interrupted that flow, but really looking into her past was something that took a great deal of time, and I was aided a lot by newspaper collections. And this is where electronic sources have been extremely helpful to researchers. So I could just search through databases and looking for her name wherever it would appear. Now, of course, early on when she first started singing on the radio in the late 1920s, she was using her her first married name, which was Fox. So she would have been known as Frances Fox. And it wasn't until the 1930s when she was with a radio station in Louisville, Kentucky, that she took the stage name of Dale Evans. So it was just this process of searching for her name through these newspaper databases and seeing where she appeared in news stories. And this was also a way of gauging her popularity. How well known was she in these first in these sort of local circles in Memphis, Tennessee, in Louisville, then she goes on to Dallas, Texas, before Chicago. So through all of this, she's steadily building her career, and she's also trying to build a private life for herself, which for her, this means a successful and happy marriage, a good home life, and she has challenges both professionally and personally throughout these years.
One gets the sense, though, that if she had stuck with the traditional narrative, having a child when she was very young, I think she was only 15, and sticking with that narrative, she never would have accomplish what she did. She had to make a decision early on whether she wanted to be a star or a mom.
Yes, and the decision she made, she still tried to hold on to both, because when she had her first and only biological son. She had been married at 14. She became a mother at 15. The marriage didn't last. And at one point, her mother offered to take the baby and raise the little boy as her son, to essentially adopt her own grandson, so that young Frances, who becomes Dale Evans, so she could sort of just go on being a teenager, go back to school, do those kinds of things. And she made this decision to stay with her, what was left of her family. She continued to live with her mother and her son, and her mother took care of the little boy while Frances went out, and she worked for a while. She went to business school, and then she had, she had a job as a stenographer. So basically, she had the day job that allowed her to earn enough living to make a contribution, a monetary contribution to the household, to at least be around her son. And then in the evening, when the opportunity came up to sing on the radio, to make personal appearances, so she does try to juggle these things as best she can for a while. Mm-hmm. She's very young. She's still interested in romance. And there were times when she did have her son, Tommy, go live with her parents in Texas, because just based on what else was happening with her private life and her professional life, she felt she couldn't always be a good mother. But she always then tried to figure out a way to get her son back with her. So she didn't want to give up on that.
I'm guessing that a few weeks ago you nearly fainted when you heard about an incident in Texas that had its connection to your book.
It was, extremely heartbreaking, and even from the distance I'm at to this whole situation. But Dale Evans was born Frances Octavia Smith in Uvalde, Texas, and I don't know if there are still family members there to this day. It was a family connection through her mother's side. And Dale wrote often in her later life, because she goes on to publish over 20 books, I think. She's a tremendously prolific author, and most of her books were autobiographical in nature. And she wrote a lot about spending time on her grandparents' farm in Uvalde. And she loved it there. She loved her Texas roots. And of course, as she became a star later in her life, especially a Western star, a cowgirl, she often touched back on those roots. So yes, it was a particularly heartbreaking connection.
It's the Book Nook, and we'll continue my conversation with Teresa Kaminsky right after this. Teresa Kaminsky joins me. Her new book is Queen of the West, The Life and Times of Dale Evans. I guess we need to speed through this early life. The second husband, big mistake, abusive drunk. The third husband, nice guy, a musician. She's moving along with her career. She's getting a little momentum going. She adopts a stage name, and she's finally called out for her first screen test out in Hollywood. And that didn't turn out so well. It was so heartbreaking to read about the reception she received when she got out there. She didn't sleep well on the transatlantic, or I should say the overland plane. She didn't sleep well at all, and she showed up in Los Angeles in terrible shape, and this agent was not very nice to her.
Right, and she had been a bit ambivalent about making the trip in the first place, and it had to do with a couple of things. One is that her real ambition had always been to be on the Broadway stage. She thought of herself as that kind of an actor, you know, doing musical comedies on stage was what she really wanted. So getting this call from Hollywood was not exactly what she was looking for in her career. And yes, she was married for the third time. By this point, the marriage was happy. It was stable. She had her son living with her again, so that part of her personal life was all going very well. But the other big thing that made her pause was her age.
Mm-hmm.
She was already in her late 20s by that time, and she knew enough about Hollywood to know that, you know, she wasn't going in there as some ingenue, and that's really what everybody was expecting. And the man, her first agent, Joe Rivkin, was, I guess, also based on her photographs, based on her singing voice, was expecting a younger woman. So he was shocked when he saw her when she got off the plane. He was shocked when she admitted she was 28, that she was married, that she had a child. And he gives her a very quick and devastating tutorial about how she has to manage her personal information, that she's supposed to tell everybody she's 21 or 22. The marriage is okay. She should just kind of downplay it. And she does agree to tell people that Tommy is actually her younger brother and not her son. So all of this, she's hit with all of this very quickly when she gets to Hollywood. The screen test, it goes well enough, but Paramount actually ends up passing on her because they just don't think she is special enough.
Mm-hmm.
And they were particularly disappointed that she didn't have dancing skills to go along with her singing skills.
And she eventually did make it to Hollywood. Her husband made it there as well. He got jobs working in movies, and she started making cowboy movies for Republic Pictures with Roy Rogers. And She didn't like it. She didn't want to be in cowboy movies. She fought it, didn't she?
Yes, she did. And she ended up at a place called Republic Pictures. That's where Roy Rogers already was. Dale had a one-year contract before that with 20th Century Fox, and she had appeared in a few movies very briefly. She got credited, but nothing major. And after a year, her contract expired. She has a new agent, and she ends up at Republic. And she goes there because, they're very interested in her to begin with. She takes her husband with her for her audition to Republic. So he's her accompanist. He plays the piano while she sings. They do very well there. They put her to work right away on a picture, even as they're getting the contract set up for her. They really like her, but they do place her, first of all, in contemporary musical comedies. And that's actually where she feels most comfortable, and she thinks she does her best work, and she's very happy. She was very happy at Republic. She loved working all the time. And when the head of the studio, Herbert Yates, first approached her about co-starring with Roy Rogers, she went to her agent immediately and said, "I don't want to do this." Mm-hmm. And her objection was not to Roy personally. She had actually met him already. She thought he was a nice guy, had absolutely nothing against him. But what she didn't like were Western movies, because from her perspective, Westerns made stars out of men. Mm-hmm. They did not make stars out of women. And she intended to be a star. So with that first attempt to cast her with Roy, she and her agent managed to convince Herbert Yates, the head of the studio, not to do it. But he got it in his head that because she was from Texas, she would be the perfect co-star for Roy. So when he came back again and said, "I've got this other film I want you to be in with Roy," he would not be put off, and she performed in The Cowboy and the Señorita, which came out in 1944, and was a very big hit with both sets of fans, both her fans and his fans, just loved their chemistry together. Herbert Yates thought this was the greatest thing and continued, despite her protests, to cast her opposite Roy.
So here we are near the end of World War II, and she's finally starting to break through as a Hollywood star, not in movies that she wanted to be in, but she started to get well-known. Plus, she was so hardworking. She had been doing a lot of USO touring during the war, and this built an audience for her. And then after the war ended, a couple of things happened. First of all, she and her husband got divorced. They were living separate lives. And then Roy Rogers had a terrible personal tragedy, which left him widowed.
Right. And, it must have been such a tumultuous time for both of them. First, Dale, with her third marriage ending, and she was still trying to distance herself professionally from Roy. And she was doing well with radio appearances, personal appearances, recordings, those kinds of things. She's still trying to step out on her own. And then Roy loses his wife shortly after she gives birth to their son. And it was tremendously unexpected. Roy and Dale were also working together on a radio program. And as he was trying to cope with suddenly becoming a widower, and at this point, he not only had a newborn son, but he had two young daughters as well. So he's got these three young children to take care of. He's kind of at loose ends. He has to hire, he has to hire a housekeeper. He has to hire a nurse. And Dale does kind of lend that shoulder, and their friendship actually starts to change. And she's drawn back into his orbit, and she does go back to doing movies, and she's making personal appearances with him, especially at his rodeos, which were huge attractions. And pretty soon he proposed marriage, and she said yes. So in late 1947, she's once again a bride, but this time she has three young stepchildren, and she hasn't been the mother to a small child in, years by this point. So she's kind of at a loss about what to do.
And she's still got her own son, Tommy, who is getting older all the time. And this is right about this point, shortly after they got married, Tommy does something very crucial that he's wanted to do for a long time. Tommy is a devout Christian, and I was surprised to learn, reading the book, that neither Dale Evans nor Roy Rogers were particularly religious until Tommy finally got his mother to get on board, and man, did she get on board.
Right. And Dale had actually come from a Baptist family. Both of her parents were. It was fairly conservative. So she had grown up with this religious tradition. Her parents remained very religious, and much of her son Tommy's religious education came from his grandmother. And as I had mentioned, he did spend time at different points in his life living with his grandparents. So he had been exposed to this constantly as a child, and he really embraced it. And so for his entire life, he was a very devout Christian. And as a young man, and he was getting ready to start college, as a young man watching his mother struggle with this new family, with these young children who weren't entirely connecting with her early on, he suggests that maybe what their family needs is church. Mm-hmm. And so he gets her to go to church services with him, and she does find that for her, first, this is exactly what she needs. And she re-embraces that faith again. The children are then all raised as church-going children. And it doesn't take Roy very long before he gets into it, too. And so they do become a family that's very dedicated, not just to Sunday services, but to really embracing and exhibiting their Christian faith in all aspects of their lives.
Mm-hmm. Teresa Kaminsky joins me, and we're talking about her book, Queen of the West, The Life and Times of Dale Evans. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, connecting our community through news, music, and storytelling on the air and online. And they successfully make the transition, Roy and Dale, from making movies to TV. And this is a tough transition because at the time, the movie industry, they were kind of asleep at the switch. They didn't see the threat of TV. They tried to keep their movie stars from doing television. And they ended up making this very successful TV show. I was astonished to learn how many movies Roy Rogers made. And they tried to steal the rights to his films to show on TV, and all that stuff is in the book. And then we get to the point where they start adopting children, and they endured so much tragedy. I mean, this was stunning to me. I could not believe the tragedy they endured. They have a daughter of their own. This is the first really big tragedy.
Right. And it was the pregnancy was unexpected. Dale was in her late 30s, and she apparently really had not been thinking about adding to the family through a pregnancy of her own. And this came as a surprise. She and Roy, though, were just ecstatic about it. And one of the fascinating things I found is that as soon as she announced she was pregnant, and again, this very much reflects the time period, she also said she would be stepping back from much of her performing career and Republic wouldn't cast her in pictures while she was pregnant. But she did, and I've never been able to find actual copies of this, but she did perform for a while on a kind of a local TV show in the Los Angeles area. It was a variety show. It had a Western theme, and she appeared live while she was pregnant on the show, but they had ways of, you know, kind of hiding what we refer to today as the baby bump. But I was really surprised to find out about that, because it's really not something that you hear about going back to the very beginning of the 1950s with pregnant women. But she did pretty much stay out of the limelight while she was pregnant. She was happy to do so. She was looking forward to the birth of the baby. And this is also a time period in which the kinds of prenatal testing that we have available today were not available back then. And shortly after giving birth to their daughter, who they named Robin, she found out that Robin had been born with Down syndrome. And she and Roy didn't really know much about Down syndrome. And the first pieces of advice that they got from medical professionals was to put their daughter in what were called institutions and to essentially forget about her. Oh. I mean, that's literally the advice that they were being given. And they wouldn't do it. They saw their daughter and they said, "This is our daughter. She is part of our family." And as soon as they could arrange it, as soon as she was medically able, she came home from the hospital. Along with the Down syndrome, Robin was born with a pretty severe heart condition, which was the big issue as far as Roy and Dale were concerned. It was inoperable. There was nothing that could fix it. So they had to be very careful about Robin's health. And as careful as they were with nurses, they couldn't stop her from catching the mumps that spread through the household with their other children. Mm-hmm. And Robin actually died shortly before her second birthday, which just was so devastating to both Roy and Dale.
And they were fortunate that they had their strong faith, because they were going to be tested even more. They lost a couple more children, and I'll leave that for readers of your book to discover what happened and what those tragedies involved. Hold on to your cowboy hats. We've got one more segment coming up with Teresa Kaminsky talking Dale Evans right after this. We're spinning our lariats in the book nook today with Teresa Kaminsky. During this period, they had this huge success with their TV show. But after that, they had difficulties, didn't they? They tried to develop shows, and they were doing all these different things, and they had mixed results. And then by around the early 1960s, they started getting more involved in political causes. They became big advocates for conservatives, like the presidential candidate Barry Goldwater in 1964.
Yes. And Dale and Roy always had different ideas about why their television career sort of stalled after the popularity of the Roy Rogers Show. And they did believe that some of it was connected to their overt Christianity, that they incorporated certain songs, hymns into their shows. And they did this with their personal appearances at their rodeos as well. Dale often wore a cross around her neck. So they weren't at all trying to hide their Christianity. And in fact, they became very prominent members of an organization called the Hollywood Christian Group. And it wasn't too long then before they did start to incorporate politics in with this, and they were very much attracted to conservative Republican politics in the early 1960s. This meant support for Barry Goldwater, and by the 1980 campaign, they were also actively campaigning for Ronald Reagan. So they did blend their conservative politics with their Christian faith, which really becomes a kind of popular thing among Christian circles by the mid to late 70s and heading through the 1980s.
And you alluded to this earlier, but I want to step back to it. During the same period, particularly after the death of their daughter, the daughter who didn't live to be two, they also experienced Dale Evans becoming a best-selling writer. You mentioned all these books that she sold. A lot of them had religious themes. And she was on the bestseller lists and was very much enjoying that aspect of her fame. And I wondered, as I read about that, did Teresa actually read every one of those books? Did Teresa actually watch the over 80 Roy Rogers movies in their entirety when she was doing this research? I was trying to picture you trying to do that.
And I have to admit, I have not read and watched every single thing. Even spread across 10 years of research, I would have been hard-pressed to find the time for everything. Uh-huh. But I have read, I think, most of the books, and especially starting with her first one. And this was the one that really launched her writing career. And it remains, and I think it's still in print today. It's gone through so many editions. And it's called Angel Unaware. And it's about her daughter Robin's life and death. Mm-hmm. And it really struck a chord with a lot of readers in the 1950s who, like Roy and Dale, may have had experiences like this with their own family members, and yet, you know, not much of this was made public. And so here you have this beloved entertainer who is publicly writing about her own family's experiences. So the book really did catch on, and it gained her a very wide and dedicated readership, and not only from, say, Christian circles, but also from anybody who dealt with children with disabilities. She really does have a way of speaking through her writing to people, and she continued writing almost up until the day she died. And her books reflected the different stages in her life, the different kinds of issues that she was facing. She wrote a book for her son Tommy. She wrote a book for each of her other children who died. So she puts her grief out there publicly, and she allows people to see how that grieving process works.
And throughout her career, she found herself having to tweak the narrative. Tommy, eventually she could admit that he wasn't her younger brother, that he was her son. But even late in life, as she was affiliating with these various conservative causes, she still had to tweak the narrative a little bit. Let's not mention the second husband. That really doesn't look good.
Yes, it's one of the things that she really constantly glossed over in her books. And it is interesting because she of course, can't help but mention her first husband, because that marriage was how she had Tommy, her first biological, or her only biological son. And she does also talk about her third husband, Robert Dale Butts, but it's the second one, August Wayne Johns, that she, you know, in some cases she just doesn't mention. She'll just kind of mention in general previous marriages. She does make mention of his drinking. I've seen the divorce papers, and those do mention kind of verbal abuse that may have gone along with the drinking. So it's hard to tell exactly what that all involved. They were also married during the 1930s, which we all know was a difficult time for a lot of people because of the Depression. Mm-hmm. So there were additional money and career problems. But another interesting thing about it, that second marriage, was that she did try for several years to make it work. She didn't, her first marriage, she thought, ended much too soon. And so she did really try to make that second one work, and it just didn't. And my impression was that even after many years, she might not have been able to explain even adequately to herself why it didn't work. Mm. And so she did spend more time talking about the first and the third. And then, of course, after 1947, she's married to Roy, and that marriage endures for 50 years. So she's got this, you know, she's, for the last marriage, she's finally got this great marriage that she'd always wanted.
My image of them is so wholesome. And the first thing that always comes to my mind when I think of Roy Rogers and Dale Evans is the song Happy Trails. And we learn in the book, which is a very sympathetic portrait of Dale Evans, that she was quite a songwriter and that she wrote that song.
Right. And she wrote it, after Robin was born. And she was feeling, I think, this mixture of hope and, you know, a little bit of sadness. And the song came to her, and she and Roy first used it on their radio show. And then later it was attached to their television show, which at 30 minutes, you know, a kind of a brisk Western adventure. It actually, unlike their movies and their radio shows, didn't have a whole lot of music in it, but Happy Trails was used at the end. And the other song that she wrote during the years of this television show, and maybe over the decades her name has gotten detached from it, but I think even today for a lot of children who are in Sunday school, they may know the song, The Bible Tells Me So.
Uh-huh.
And this was a song that she wrote for one of the television episodes, and it was kind of a spur-of-the-moment thing. The plot line for that episode, she thought, really needed a song to move it along, and during a break, she just sat down and she wrote the song, and it went on to be at least as enduring as Happy Trails. And, you know, it was recorded by multiple artists. And, you know, so she had a big success with that. And those are only two examples of the most well-known of her songs. But, yes, she has a lot of songwriting credits to her name.
The book is Queen of the West, The Life and Times of Dale Evans. Teresa Kaminsky wrote it. And it's a meticulous biography. Teresa really goes into detail. We see what they're eating for lunch. We see all these details and experience so much of what their lives were like. And one anecdote that I really enjoyed was, at one point, I think that they're eating in a restaurant, and they're getting ready to let some kids in there to run up to Roy Rogers and Dale Evans and talk to them or get their autographs. And Roy's like, no, don't let them in. And you want to tell them why?
Yeah, and this is really, again, one of those kind of outlier stories, because it's totally against all of their public appearances, where they are surrounded by children and, you know, everybody is having a good time. But they had been out on a personal tour, and they had just gone over the border into Canada, and they were looking for some quiet time. And, of course, being Roy Rogers and Dale Evans, even in Canada, they couldn't go unnoticed. So while they were having lunch, you know, local reporter comes in, and he's got a photographer with him, and there are children who are starting to mass outside, and they want to come in, of course, and say hello to Roy and to Dale. And Roy does react rather abruptly, you know, no, don't bring those children in here. And it was really, part of it, I think, was because they had been looking forward to some quiet time, and I think the other part of it was he also didn't have his full cowboy costume on. I think he didn't have his hat with him.
Right.
So he felt he just felt kind of taken by surprise and
naked.
Naked with
no
hat.
Cowboy hat. Yeah.
Right. No hat. No cowboy. And so he was pretty vehement about not letting these children in, and the reporter was not particularly willing to gloss over this episode. And as I mentioned, this was a very unusual thing, because Roy Rogers' agent and manager, Art Rush, was just such an expert at PR. And in the States, he would have easily handled this.
Uh-huh.
In Canada, he really couldn't. But the interesting thing is, although I found this account in a Canadian newspaper, I did notice that the American press, the U.S. press, didn't pick up the story and run with it. So I think that, you know, there was still some goodwill enough in the United States that nobody really wanted to spread the story about Roy Rogers not being his usual nice self to children. And so the story just kind of sunk into obscurity. And, but, you know, I thought twice about including it, just because it was such an unusual thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I did ultimately decide to do it, because I think it is just a reminder of how celebrity can be very wearing on the stars themselves, and they can't always be on for their public at all times. And even people as practiced as Roy and Dale might slip up from time to time. And, you know, we've just got to acknowledge the human beings behind all of this.
Yes, the celebrities of today with their millions of Instagram followers or Twitter followers, they have very little privacy. They have to pay a lot of money to get privacy. And back in those days, to put it in perspective, you have a portion in the book where you talk about how they had opened an office. It used to be a residence. I think it was her residence in the San Fernando Valley. And they turned into an office just to receive their mail because Roy alone was getting 7,000 letters a day.
Right. Oh, it was astonishing. And, it, you know, this does speak to changes in communication and technology. But, yes, the kind of fan mail that he was getting and then that she was getting, you know, it's like somebody on Twitter having, you know, several hundred thousand followers. It's that kind of popularity. So, yes, they had to have a dedicated space just and they had to hire people just to open and answer all of this fan mail. And in the late 40s and throughout most of the 1950s, wherever Roy and Dale went, thousands of fans would turn up. And in some cases, tens of thousands. I mean, you know, that's a lot of people. That's a huge fan base. So their celebrity was huge in the mid-20th century.
So true. Well, Teresa, we really appreciate you taking some time to talk to us about your new biography.
Well, I really enjoy it. As you can tell, I've got so many stories about Dale, and I just hope that your listeners are as fascinated as I am in the topic that they'll want to go ahead and read some more.
The book is Queen of the West, The Life and Times of Dale Evans. And I just have one more quick question. Why?
Sure.
Why did you write about her?
Well, because I am kind of that age. What I remember from my childhood is not the first run of The Roy Rogers Show, but the Saturday morning reruns of The Roy Rogers Show. And I just thought that Dale Evans was so unlike any other woman I had seen on the small screen. She had those fabulous Western clothes. She could ride a horse, and she could sing. And to me, that was just astonishing. So as an adult, I had the opportunity to find out more, and I did.
So if you're watching Roy Rogers on Saturday morning, you were probably also watching Sky King and Sergeant Preston of the Yukon.
Well, you know, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
Somebody mentioned Sky King to me the other day.
Sky King.
And I don't know if maybe our local channels, if they carried those reruns, I wasn't watching them. But certainly the reruns of Roy Rogers, The Lone Ranger, those are the ones I really remember. But, you know, The Lone Ranger didn't have Dale Evans. So to me, it was not as good.
I had a crush on Penny on Sky King. Hey, thanks a lot. It's really been great talking to you, Teresa.
Thanks so much, Vic.
You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. Once again, my guest has been Teresa Kaminsky, and her book is Queen of the West, The Life and Times of Dale Evans. Thanks for listening, and happy trails to you.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails.
The clouds if we're together.
Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather.